Back at it on Tuesday, October 8th, Ken Mitchell Jr. joined us from the Valley Fire Chiefs Regional Training School, talking about why that school hasn't been built yet. It is sorely needed, Ken, and many people say, is it being held up by politics? We spoke with Ken about that. Also, we talked about a controversy as to whether or not Connecticut should follow the lead of California and pass a bill that would allow college athletes all over the state, like those at UConn, Fairfield, Sacred Heart, Quinnipiac, and other schools, to be paid for playing sports for their university or to get endorsement deals.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And for that, we all thank you. Me, Paul Pacelli, Aaron Johnson, the producer, Mr. Big Voice there, you just heard, the bosses, everyone here, we thank you so much. Locally owned WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com. And because we're locally owned, we care about the local issues that you do, including the controversy now that's been raging for a couple of years, actually, but it may be coming to a head, we don't know, regarding the Valley Fire Chiefs Regional Training School. Who runs it? What is it? What's the problem? Well, our next guest is a past captain of the Webster Hose and Hook and Ladder Company in Ansonia, past captain of the Orange Volunteer Fire Department, 46 years as a volunteer firefighter, and he is president of the Valley Fire Chiefs Regional Training School. And we welcome here to WICC to help us sort through all this, Ken Mitchell. Ken, Paul here at WICC. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, Ken. Hey, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it, Ken. Before we get into the nuts and bolts as to what's exactly going on here, tell people about what the Regional Training School is. How long has it been around and what it does, Ken, on a regular basis?
Well, it was formed in 1964, and we operated out of Derby, where the Riverwalk is, Sullivan's Island.
Okay.
We had a burn building and a tower there, an office building, classroom, storage facility.
Yeah.
And then they declared a brownfield, and they came in and took the site, remediated, and now it's presently the Riverwalk Park. And I'm not sure what other name. So that happened, and we were told to leave or evicted, call it what you want,
yeah,
in 1999, 2000, right around that timeline.
Okay.
And since then, we've been homeless, for lack of a better word.
So where does the training, Ken, go on that's necessary? You said you had a classroom facility there, a burn tower. I've seen fire training facilities before. You have to train men and women how to approach fires, how to climb ladders, this and the other. Where does that go on now?
Well, now we're kind of tramping around wherever we can, and we've been very fortunate that the member towns in the Valley Regional Fire Chiefs have allowed us space. Okay, yeah, you can use our meeting room to hold your classes.
Okay.
Then we have to either make arrangements and schedule wherever, whenever we can, and either go all the way to Fairfield or all the way into New Haven to use the towers or the burn building.
Yeah, when I ride Metro North, the train goes right by that burn tower. I see it two or three times a week there, right off the water there in New Haven. So people should understand, Ken, this is where the training goes on, correct, for a lot of these volunteer firefighters in the Valley area.
That's correct.
And how many, Ken, how many, I don't know, in an average year, I don't know what the turnover is, but how big are your classes? How many people, men and women, will you train in, say, a given year? Maybe newcomers or people brushing up on their techniques? You have a raw number for me?
Well, we have a whole variety of curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's Firefighter 1 for the new rookie, if call it if you will, the new rookie coming in.
Yeah.
Teaches him basic fundamentals, and then he gets into, you know, actual fire and burning and climbing ladders and ropes and all sorts of evolutions that we need to know for the fire service.
Yeah.
And we'll hold that class twice a year, usually, and it's an extensive class. It's approximately close to 6 months.
Wow.
A couple nights a week.
Wow.
And every other weekend. And we average 30 to 35 students in that class each time. Then we'll have Firefighter 2, which is more advanced,
mm-hmm.
and we usually hold that twice a year. And that's roughly the same, 25 to 30 enrolled in each class. But then throughout, we teach Q2 training, where we train drivers on fire apparatus, how to drive fire apparatus, mm-hmm. and pump and operate the fire apparatus.
And again, people should know, Ken, that you're training mainly volunteers, right? I mean, a lot of these towns and cities in the area, in our general area, a lot of them still have volunteer departments, correct?
Well, basically all the towns that we serve are totally volunteer.
Wow.
There may be some paid administrative positions, but the actual firefighters are fully volunteer.
Okay, so we go back to 2001, Ken, and the guest here is Ken Mitchell, Jr., president of the Valley Fire Chiefs Regional Training School. So we go back to 2001, and that, I guess, Ken, is when you first had a bill submitted to the General Assembly to say, hey, wait a minute, get us money, right, so we can build a new facility here so we can centralize all this and get back and up and operating with one spot, correct?
That's correct.
So talk me through what has happened since then.
Well, in 2001, 2002, the General Assembly came out and said, yes, it's a necessity. And they put in the committee, and it's actually a House bill,
mm-hmm.
that they will either build or reconstruct the 9 regional academies throughout the state.
Okay.
And they started with New Haven, then they did one in Hartford.
Yep.
They've done one in which is known as Litchfield County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's up in Torrington. And they also have done, or they're finishing now, or it's in a work in progress for the Eastern Fire School, and okay. that's in Willimantic.
All right, yeah.
And then it kind of ground to a halt the last 3 years, 4 years.
Now, again, I see here that under the Rell administration, there was property purchased. Where's that?
That's on Lancaster Drive in Beacon Falls.
Okay, so you've got the space you need there still?
Oh, yes. It's been tested. It's been perked. It's been everything's been checked out. It's shovel-ready.
Mm-hmm. Now?
I mean, they could start digging tomorrow and building the school.
And now that brings us to the realities, Ken Mitchell, of what may be going on here. And the guest, by the way, is Ken Mitchell, Jr., president of the Valley Fire Chiefs Regional Training School. So as Ken just said, about $1.5 million spent on the purchase of land back in 2010 at Beacon Falls. Now it's trying to build this. What was told to you folks, Ken, during the past gubernatorial race by both the governor and the lieutenant governor here, or the candidates at the time? What was the impression you were given?
They came down, I want to say it's 11 months ago now. Mm-hmm. It was a few weeks before election. They came down to the Derby train station, and they had a press conference, and they said, yeah, we've been ignored, and they made a promise. They are going to build the fire school. It's going to be a priority item first on the list. And since then, we've been hitting brick walls.
Ken, you were telling me there before the break, a promise was made. You were probably happy to hear that, the guys and gals you work with.
We waited to hear that a year ago.
Yeah, yeah. And now, what do you... Let me just ask you this out front, and you can choose to say what you want, but what do you think now that you probably read, what we all read and hear what we all hear, that bonding for this, Ken, may be being held up because they're trying to twist arms and get some votes here on tolls? What do you think of that?
Well, that has been mentioned, that they said, oh, we need to get our transportation bill squared away.
Yeah.
Before we can proceed with anything. So take that for what it's worth, or is it just another smokescreen?
Well, yeah, but it's got to, and I'm not telling you to take a side here, but it's got to at least, no matter what the delay is, Ken, it's got to at least frustrate you that you guys and gals want this built, and anybody can see, I think, this is a public safety issue.
Exactly. Unfortunately, you know, we're asking a lot of our students.
Yeah.
They're tramping all over the area. Okay, tonight we have to go here for a classroom. Mm-hmm. Next week we have to go to this town for a classroom. And our instructors, the same thing. We have a fully staff, you know, a staff of professional instructors. And, you know, they're kind of at their wit's end because, you know, they're hauling around.
Nope.
They need to show and computers, projectors, and whatnot. And it's just not conducive to good learning, you know, because it's not just the Firefighter 1, the Firefighter 2 class.
Yeah.
There's probably 10 different courses that we offer on a regular basis in our school.
So it's hard to do this.
I have to pat the guys on the back, instructors, because they've done a phenomenal job, and the record will indicate that we have, of all the regional training schools, we have the highest number of student hours produced. We have the highest pass rate in the state for curriculum. So
you're holding up. Done. So you're holding up your end of the bargain.
Exactly, and everything they've asked for, we've provided. We need to see data on this. Here you go. We need to see data on that. Here you go. And okay. So.
No, I can
up our end of the bargain.
Yeah, no, that. And Ken, I can hear the frustration in your voice, and I understand that, you know, you've got to tread lightly on this. But to me, I'm just going to I don't care. I get paid to do this. But to me, it's a travesty when, again, like you say, you were promised, and now you've been waiting. Now, supposedly, there's going to be, I believe, a gathering later on this week, a news conference. What have you heard about that?
Well, it's a muster. Firemen have musters.
And, yeah.
Thursday. At 4 p.m.
Okay.
at the proposed site,
yeah.
We're going to hold a muster and, I guess, rally the troops, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and for continued support and, you know, basically hang in there, guys. We're going to get this done. We're not going away.
Does it make your guys and gals sad? Is it demoralizing? Do they kind of throw their hands up in the air and they say, well, we'll do what we have to do until it gets better?
Well, some of them throw their hands up in the air, and, you know, the board, myself and the board, you know, we get to look like, what's going on? What's going on? What are you doing?
Yeah.
We're doing all we can, I tell them, and it's frustrating, extremely frustrating.
I can imagine. Well, listen, there's supposed to be, like I said, I heard something this week where there may be some appearances, I guess, at your musters. So I would hope that's something you would look forward to, and maybe you can ask some pointed questions if and when these folks show up.
Yes, we will.
And you've invited...
You know, and I have to say that our, you know, both sides of the aisle, our local reps have done, you know, have given us, you know, oodles of support, so we can't fault them.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know where the fault lies.
Well, we try to sound that out here, and that's interesting, Ken, and good that you mentioned it, because, as you say, you are getting it. From what I've read and heard about this from other folks, this is a local issue where, at least on a local level, Republicans and Democrats are coming together on this.
Yes.
Good.
You're absolutely right.
Ken, listen. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish up. Go ahead.
The local municipalities are bearing some of the burden because they're taking their fire apparatus out of town to go to these, you know, the other schools we have to use, or, you know, arrange to use their facilities whenever we can. And now it becomes a safety issue because you'll have a crew of men that are in Fairfield, Connecticut. Now, how long is it going to take them to respond back to Beacon Falls if there's a serious emergency, or Oxford? And you know what it's like to drive on I-95.
Imagine trying to get a full engine back to where it's needed on that same day. Wow.
Exactly. You know, bear in mind that all these men are not getting paid. So it's their time, And they're extra expensive because they have some have to drive their own vehicles. You can only put so many men on a piece of apparatus and go out of town with it. So they have to take their personal cars. Now they have more expense. And fortunately, there's plenty of young volunteers or newcomer volunteers, young and old, that are willing to, or they have the passion to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Ken, thanks. Listen, we will keep on top of this as best as I can here and on the show, and we'll call out people that need to be called out if they need to be called out. So we'll see what happens at the end of the week. Maybe we can put enough pressure on them, but we'll see what we can do to help you folks. Ken Mitchell, Jr., president currently of the Valley Fire Chiefs Regional Training School. Ken, thanks for joining us. We'll be in touch.
Thank you very much for your continued support.
Thanks, Ken, as always. Thank you. Well, folks, there you go. So there's going to be a muster at the end of the week, and we will see. We will be in contact with members of the General Assembly, and we will see whether or not it is true that suddenly support for the Valley Fire Chiefs Regional Training School might have been slowed down a bit because... Democrats, maybe, and they can prove me wrong, is it because they don't have the vote for tolls? Think about that. That's what the allegation is, that they came out and said, well, we don't have all this toll money, so now we have to be careful in what we bond for. Now, if that's actually the tack that they're using, it's crap. And you know what the end game is here.
To Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Yeah, that's us, and I hope you are doing well today on a decent-looking Tuesday. Maybe a little more rain tonight, perhaps, says Ryan Gallagher. And we're at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC right now as you move up and underway in a Tuesday afternoon, 67 degrees. In Bridgeport, heading down to a low of 55 tonight, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We are talking today about, or at least at this point of the show, the fact that there are some people here in Connecticut, both, our federal delegation, Chris Murphy, and Richard Blumenthal and some folks in state, including West Hartford, Democratic State Senator Derek Slapp, who sits on the Education Committee, everyone is saying, hey, you know what, how about we pay student-athletes? We pay or get to compensate in some way college athletes, okay? And there's always been the notion here, there's always been the argument, and it's probably been this way for decades, right? That college athletes, by what they do, directly and indirectly brings revenue to the schools. So they are there, and they are bringing revenue to the schools. Now, there's always been the argument of, well, hey, these guys, these gals are not getting paid. Well, yeah, they're not getting paid direct cash, but I'm one of the people who will say, and I'm glad to see that at least, some people are saying this on the public scene here, saying, wait a minute, though, they do get scholarships, okay? There are, the Ivy Leagues don't give athletic scholarships, and Division III schools don't give athletic scholarships. But if you're D1 or D2 and you're a non-Ivy League school, generally you are going to that school free. And that now has turned into a pretty significant freebie. Even a decent school, room and board and food and everything, is $40,000 at minimum, at bare bones. Most of the good schools, though, are $45,000, $50,000, $55,000, $60,000 a year. Multiply that by four, right? Multiply that by four, and you're at, $250,000. So you are getting paid. I'm sorry, that's just the way I look at it. You are getting paid. You're getting paid. You're getting a $50,000, $55,000, $60,000 a year trade, as we call it here sometimes in the media business, when
you know, people do business with radio or TV stations or newspapers. It's kind of a, you know, an in-kind, as they say, compensation. Just the way if you were filing your personal income taxes and, you know, maybe you would have to declare, you know, your lodging or your housing or, you know, use of a car as part of your income. You see what I'm saying? So that does happen. Now, I know you have people saying, well, wait a minute, you know, they're making, they help the NCAA make hundreds of millions of dollars when it comes to March Madness, or it helps these schools like UConn and other schools, you know, Sacred Heart and Fairfield around here, and even schools like University of Bridgeport on a D2 level, it helps them make money. Well, yeah, well, like I said, I don't mean to be flip about this, but like I said, you know, welcome to the working world, right? How many times have you or I, think about it, we get out of school, right? And we go to work, we make $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year in our first job, and we're sitting there feeling good, but then we look up one day and we say, well, wait a minute, I'm making $50,000 and the parent company's bringing in, you know, $100 million, $20 million, $50 million. Okay, welcome to capitalism. If you don't like it, you can head to Cuba. You know, and I'm not trying to be arrogant or flip that way, but you know, these college athletes who say, well, the NCAA and my school are making millions of dollars. Well, guess what? In about 2 years or so, when you're out of school, 2 or 3 or 4 years, and you're not a star athlete, you're going to be doing that anyway. It's going to be no different whether you're, you know, you're getting paid $60,000 in an education to bring in money for UConn, or you're getting paid $60,000 because you're working for the phone company. It's the same thing. So again, this story's in The Current. It's an interesting read. You know, and I give credit to somebody who said this. Is this, let me see, blah, 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 blah. I just want to make sure we get this right. Gino Auriemma. Okay, Gino said this. I had to figure out who this quote was attributed to. Gino said, quote, there are a lot of pluses to athletes getting paid. No one's been able to figure out, though, how to deal with the negatives. And he's right here. I'm sure at some point someone will be able to figure it out because the world is changing and coaches are making billions of dollars and schools are making billions of dollars. So all players get is a free education, the cover of Sports Illustrated, 4 hours on ESPN every other night, and an opportunity to grow their brand. So I think it's completely unfair to those kids. Well, you know what? Gino, you know, it's fine. But see, but again, he says it right. Somebody has to figure it out. And that's the key. 203-333-9422-333-WICC.
If Fairfield County is talking about it, so is Paul. Connecticut Today, WICC 600.
Paying student-athletes or not? Huh? State Senator Derek Slab, Democrat West Hartford, who says maybe we should look at something like California just did. So do we pay student-athletes at Sacred Heart, at Fairfield, at UConn, at Quinnipiac, at Wesleyan? Do we pay them? And I guess if you're a state taxpayer and it's a state school like UConn, you know, is that state money? What do you do beyond scholarships? And do you let them, do you let these young men and women, negotiate their own endorsement deals? I mean, that's, you talk about a minefield you have to step through there. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Who's there? Ron in Trumbull. Let's see if Ron's back. Ron, you're on WICC.
I am. Thank you very much.
Hello.
I have a cold, so I apologize if I sound more manly.
No, that just, it's okay.
But, you know, the idea of a free college education works if these kids are actually getting an education.
Mm-hmm.
I keep going back to Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Forrest Gump got an education from the University of Alabama, but he was taking home economics.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm, NCAA lately has been very conscious of graduation rates and
sure,
putting a lot of pressure on schools. But
yeah,
what are these kids actually getting out of this stuff? Are they actually getting a degree that they can use somewhere else that help them get a job after? I mean, a lot of these kids, I'm sure, are working towards becoming a pro athlete somewhere, somehow. But the numbers say that they can't all make it.
No. So, the numbers are very low, and I think, Ron, that I'm sure they are told that over and over again, that, you know, take advantage of this education, because chances are only 1 or 2% of you will ever get a look from a pro team.
Yeah. But sometimes, but they are looking at this as a way out of whatever they're doing, a way to take care of the family.
Sure.
Get out of current situations.
Yeah.
So if you have no other opportunity, you're going to take the shot without any doubt.
And
the truth of the matter here is they are making lots of money through the universities. If you think about it, they're basically indentured servants.
Yeah, but remember, then the argument is going to be, Ron, that they're getting $60,000 a year education.
That's true.
Yeah.
Are they really getting an education, or are they just marking time?
Well, again, and Ron, thank you for the call, my friend. I have to move on. No, listen, that's a fair. What are they doing with that education? It's a good question Ron just posed. And believe me, I know from being associated with a couple of athletic programs that, you know, there's more of an emphasis now, as Ron said, on graduation rates. They want to make sure that, you know, so-called basket weaving 101. That was a running joke when I was growing up. Hey, he's taking, you know, claymation 101, basket weaving 101, and they try and tell these guys and gals, even these women players, you know, chances are, you know, if you go pro, you're not going to make that much money. Heck, the minimum salary in the WNBA is only like 60 grand a year. That league is barely hanging on. You know, once you get out of college, especially for women players, you know, you pretty much, if you want to make real money as a women's basketball player, you've got to go to Europe, you've got to play in Russia, you've got to play in maybe Brazil or South America. Yeah, the starting salary in the WNBA is $50,000. Think about that. The only reason the league stays afloat is because it's propped up by the NBA. So, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Joe in the car. Joe, hi.
Hi, that's me.
Hey, Joe, what's up? You're on, yep.
I have a solution for you.
Yep.
I don't care if they pay the players or not, but since most colleges tend to be socialistic, they should make them take half of the money that they make and give it away in scholarships. So they could keep half, 50% capitalism, 50% socialism, and give it away.
And they could, this way they could live a real-life experience of what all your left-wing professors are saying.
Exactly.
I like
I'm
that.
I'm going to let you go because I'm in the car.
Well, thank you, Joe. Keep two hands on the wheel. I appreciate that thing. Well, there you go. How funny is that? There's always that, whether you're an athlete or not at a college, whether you're an athlete or just a regular student paying your way, right? There's always been that moment of a young college person, especially my son, when he got his first sizable check, like, Dad, what's all this tax stuff? Oh, hey, how are you? Welcome to the Republican Party. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Do we pay college athletes? Some folks in Connecticut, Gino Auriemma, Randy Edsall up at UConn, our two Connecticut Senate members, Richard Blumenthal and Mr. Murphy there, Derek Slapp, State Senate Democrat, West Hartford, are saying, well, you know, wait a minute now. Maybe we should come up with a solution here, but nobody has the real specifics on this. How do you do this? Endorsements? Cash? Cash plus endorsements? How does all that work? I mean, over the past few years, one thing I've realized is, and it kind of hit me in the head like a bolt of lightning one day, I said, wait a minute. Part of the problem we have here in society, whether it's trying to deal with athletes getting paid or coming up with, you know, answers to tough questions is everybody is willing to itch and cry and moan about it, okay? But when you tell them, okay, you make maybe a viable point here, okay, what would you do to change this, or what would you do to make this better? And that's where you start getting the homina, 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 hominas. You know what I mean? That's when you start getting the, it is kind of hard. Yeah, so what do you want to do? You want to turn you want to turn college sports into professional sports? Maybe you do. Maybe you do. Says here in the current story, and they're right to point this out, critics saying athletes already get four-year scholarships that include housing and meal plans, which add up to a value of more than $200,000 at some private colleges. That's a lot of money. Do you realize how many students, student athletes and or their families could never dream of paying this? Blumenthal said, quote, let's face it, scholarships are a form of compensation. I think the time is now to consider additional compensation. I want to hear more about what the colleges think. What I don't want to hear is simply dismissing it without accepting the need for some kind of fair treatment and equity. Some schools are very dismissive because the reason these schools, Senator, are dismissive is because they know what goes on. They know what goes on, okay? They have dealt with sleazy boosters before. Honest to God, I know there are a great percentage of employers and boosters who want to help the student athletes, who want to do everything above board. They want to do everything within the correct guidelines that are set down. You and I both know that. But come on, look at the stuff down through the years that has even touched UConn occasionally, let alone the stuff that you hear about all the time from big-time schools, Texas, Alabama, Oklahoma, LSU, a lot of Kansas. Look at what Kansas is going through now with their basketball program. So to me, if suddenly we're going to start paying the UConn football team or paying the UConn women's basketball team or paying the basketball team at UConn for the men, you bet if they even go down this road, you had better have regulation on this. Honestly. You had better have regulation on this that makes the IRS look like romper room. You have to. You must. You have to. This has all the potential to be abused like you would not believe. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. And believe me, I know how hard college athletes work. I've seen it first. Look, they're getting a scholarship. I get it. But they do have to, put up or shut up on their end of the deal. So I have been on bus rides with teams where we would leave at, 4 or 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, spend 6 hours, 7 hours getting somewhere, 6 hours. Skating before a game, playing a game, eating afterwards, and coming back on the bus and looking back and, seeing two-thirds of the team with their books open and their reading lights on, which is great. It's the way it's supposed to be. So in that sort of a framework, it is like having a job that you have to do while you're in school. But again, let's not forget that with that comes a free education that the vast majority of people, even in this country, cannot afford unless they put themselves in, unending debt. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. To pay college athletes here in Connecticut or not? Do we pay UConn athletes? Do we pay athletes at Sacred Heart or Fairfield or Wesleyan or Quinnipiac or places like that? Should they have rights to market themselves? Should a athlete who's above board and maintaining their grades and playing great, the star of the team, should they be able to go to, Joe's Motors and get a brand new car, get a brand new SUV because they'll do the TV commercials when, not everybody else on the team is doing that?